Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line a David Wade, who's written a fascinating book called Infamy Revisited. And it is the story of what happened at Pearl Harbor. Now, why is Pearl Harbor important? After all, that was 60 years ago. Well, almost 65 years ago now. But it is important because it goes into the background of the question, would the President of the United States, and with the help of the media and the establishment, allow almost 3,000 American boys to be killed there at Pearl Harbor so he could get us into a war, the war with Europe, which he had already committed to doing? And if he would do that, would it be unthinkable that similar things could happen at a later date? Is it possible that there were people in Washington, and I'm not suggesting for one minute that the president knew exactly what was going to happen, but is it possible that there were people working within our intelligence agencies who suspected that there was going to be an attack on the 11th of September of 2001 and did absolutely nothing to ward that off? In fact, even lowered the restrictions as far as bringing weapons onto the plane and as far as people getting on with terrorist backgrounds, and specifically did not report people who were known terrorists had them on the terrorist watch list when they'd been watching them all the time and they knew their every motion and they knew exactly what was going to happen and they even knew the date of the attack. Could that really possibly happen? Well, in the background, let's go to David Wade. Hi, David. Thank you so very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how it was that you happened to write this book, Infamy Revisited?
To tell, other than that, I grew up in a generation where nearly all of the kids that I went to school with had parents who were in the Second World War. As you know, we had 14 million men under arms during the Second World War, which was the most titanic event of the 20th century. And we all grew up listening to our father's war stories. And it was something that was always discussed. And I remember even as a kid hearing expressions of skepticism about just exactly how it was we got into the war. Questions being raised about why it was that our commanders in the field in Hawaii, that is to say General and Admiral Kimmel, were caught flat-footed. How could that have happened? And it was something that was always in the back of my mind. And when I had an opportunity one day to sit down and research it, I decided to produce this book, which is by no means an original work of scholarship, but is a compilation of the researches of many other historians who have looked into Pearl Harbor and have raised these same questions.
Well, that's why I think your book is important and why we carry it here at Radio Liberty, because it will give you the benefit of what so many other people, John Tolan, certainly Robert Stennett, and so many of the other people who have written this extensively. Admiral Kimmel wrote a book. Many of the people who were associated with Pearl Harbor wrote books. And you begin to put all of this together, and you get a pretty good analysis of what happened. And I think there's very little question that our leaders knew the attack was coming and specifically did nothing to stop it and did everything they could to conceal the truth from Admiral Kimmel and General Short. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is David Wade, and we're talking about a book he has written about Pearl Harbor. It's called Infamy Revisited. And it's a fascinating book because it really catalogs and chronicles what so many other people who've done extensive research have done. And instead, of course, you having to go through all of their details, David has pulled out the important details and put them into his book. He's, of course, is quoted from John Tolan, who really a very well-known writer for many years ago. In fact, I had the privilege of interviewing John Tolan. And then we had the opportunity to interview Robert Sinnott. So I'm going to let you tell us what you found going through these books, would you?
Okay, well, first of all, let's begin with the old news first, as they say in business meetings. What's old, what has been known for a long time, of course, is that we had cracked, the Japanese was their foremost diplomatic code. What is also known is that we obviously knew within a week before Pearl Harbor was actually attacked that the United States and Japan was going to war, and I don't think any reputable historian would deny that. What is new, just learned within the time that has lapsed since John Tolan first wrote his book and now. First, we know Japanese fleet, Kido Butai, Japanese strike force making its way across the North Pacific, did not maintain radio silence. Second, we know that we intercepted Japanese radio traffic on the high seas, and that means that we knew both the location and destination of that strike force. This revelation means that we knew Pearl Harbor itself was going to be attacked, and third, specifically, the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, overwhelming circumstantial evidence would indicate, certainly knew that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked at least within 4 days of the actual attack on December 7th.
But, David, we've been told over and over again that we had lost contact with the Japanese fleet, that sort of this massive fleet had disappeared in the air. They kept their radio silence. We had no idea where they were. Are you suggesting that the media lied to us, that government officials would lie to us, and they actually went around and collected all the evidence so that there would be no evidence to show?
An order went out from the Chief of Naval Intelligence, Royal Ingersoll, right after Pearl Harbor to destroy everything in writing about Pearl Harbor.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is David Wade, who's written a wonderful revisited. He pointed out that certainly we've been told many, many things that just aren't true. We were told that the Japanese fleet was maintaining radio silence. We had no idea where they were. This gigantic, massive fleet had just sort of disappeared, and we had no idea where they were. And as David pointed out, there were many intercepts. We were tracking the fleet. We knew where they were, and we knew when they were just off the northwest coast of Oahu. But they were lying to the American people. And then David had said that the Chief of Naval Intelligence had put out an order that all evidence showing that we knew where the Japanese fleet was before the attack was to be collected and destroyed. Right.
Destroy everything in writing. That's a verbatim quote. And there are many other gaps in the evidence. For instance, we know that Station Cast in the Philippines was relaying a decrypts to Station Hypo in Hawaii, and that some of these decrypts were being sent to Arthur H. McCollum, who was the routing officer for President Franklin D. Roosevelt. But the strange thing is that while we can find about 74, exactly, I think it was, 74 of such messages that were sent to Cast by way of Hypo, there were only about four, there were 67 that were actually sent to the White House that are missing out of that 74. In other words, there are only five that are accounted for.
And I think what's so interesting is that to this very day, all of that information, or so much of it, is still classified. And why are they classifying it over 60, almost 65 years since the event? Are they trying to conceal it from the Japanese, or are they trying to conceal it from the American people? And how can we have a free society when there are people within the government concealing the truth from the people?
Yeah, well, when Jimmy Carter was president, he did sign an executive order that declassified thousands of transmissions prior to Pearl Harbor, and there were thousands because all around the world we were tracking the Japanese. We had broken their codes and we were reading their mail. I should mention not only the diplomatic code, but we had largely broken JN-25, which was the principal naval code of the Japanese Navy. But there were still thousands of others that for some reason remain classified. The government will tell you that it would jeopardize state security if they were declassified. That's a very very mysterious explanation how, after 65 years after the war is over and the Japanese have surrendered, how does this somehow jeopardize our security?
Maybe they don't want Osama bin Laden to know.
I don't know. There's a connection between Osama bin Laden and Hirohito.
Well, all I can say is that they're concealing everything from the American people. They did it then. They're doing it today. And now, one of the interesting things is that immediately after Pearl Harbor, there were a series of investigations. But the president, made sure that the people who did the investigations were all favorable to him. And it just exactly as it happened after 9/11. And the investigations, first of all, George Bush did everything he could to block the investigations. When it became obvious they were going to be held, then they insisted on the right to limit the access to information and to censor the reports before they ever released to the American people. And if there's nothing to hide, then are they hiding?
They had a lot of investigations, but they also had a lot of witnesses who probably perjured themselves. They also had a lot of key witnesses that were never called and were not permitted to testify because they were members of the military, and of course they had to submit themselves to the authority of their superiors, and their superiors told them, you're not testifying.
Now this, of course, you're talking about Pearl Harbor now.
Right.
All right, so, and this is exactly what happened, and of course there were people who would give testimony at one investigation one way, and then the next investigation they would give it the opposite way, and when asked, well, why have you changed your testimony, they said, because my superior officer told me what I said was wrong, and he must be right, you know, because my superior officer is always right. Mm-hmm. And of course what he really meant was, I wouldn't get promoted if I told the truth. Mm-hmm. And exactly. But there was one officer, what was his name, Stafford?
Lieutenant Commander Lawrence Stafford. He was the one who swore up and down he did in fact see the notorious East Wind Rain execute, which everyone understood would mean that Japan would be going to war, and he was the only one who showed up and testified that yes, he did see it, although later there were a whole flock of other officers that privately admitted that they saw it too.
But
it was supposed to have been locked in the safe of Elwin Kramer at the Office of Naval Intelligence on Connecticut Avenue.
But of course it destroyed it.
Disappeared, wasn't there. And Stafford was remanded to psychiatric treatment by his superiors. They said there's got to be something wrong with this boy's head because he's seeing things.
And the tragedy is, if you work for government and you're in the military and you tell the truth, that's the end of your career. Well, there's something inherently wrong with that sort of a system. I mean, we should have this concept of duty and honor in country, but unfortunately, we've done away with honor and we've done away with integrity at every level of government, and it didn't begin just recently with Karl Rove. It goes all the way back to the time of the time of Pearl Harbor, and of course, the Lieutenant Commander Stafford, who told the truth, and that was the end of his military career.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The last investigation actually began in 1995 and was conducted by former Senator Strom Thurmond of South Carolina. And after all these years, Congress did in fact pass a resolution exonerating both Kimmel and Short from dereliction of duty. But President Clinton, on the advice of the Defense Department, refused to endorse the resolution.
And so, of course, Bill Clinton didn't sign it, and so for all intents and purposes, even though everybody knows that these men were simply set up, they were the fall guys for the betrayal that took place on December 7th, 1941, why Bill Clinton didn't have the integrity to at least acknowledge, though they were long since dead, mm-hmm. they were completely innocent.
Well, and they were set up in a very subtle manner, too, because although they were warned of the impending outbreak of war with Japan, they were also cautioned, A, don't do anything to disturb the civilian population, and B, prepare to defend yourselves from sabotage from the Japanese-American population in the Hawaiian Islands. The possibility of an aerial attack wasn't mentioned. And they proceeded to do just that. They followed their orders as best as they could. But how do you proceed to protect yourself from an attack without disturbing the civilian population? That was a puzzle. They didn't know quite what to do. The reason why, for instance, the airplanes were destroyed so easily by the Japanese is because they were all bunched together in circles so that they could be better protected by sentries on the ground, since General Short thought he was supposed to be preparing for attacks by Japanese saboteurs, from the air.
But, of course, Admiral Kimmel had wanted to put the fleet to sea, so it wouldn't be a target.
Led.
It wouldn't let him do it.
That's right. And Kimmel responded to General Marshall, and he said, look, I have done everything I could to get ready for possible sabotage attacks. Marshall never replied to that message from Short. So what conclusion could Short draw other than that he had done what was expected of him?
And, of course, really what's so amazing, if you really follow it, they knew even the very time that the attack was going to come. Mm-hmm. And they did everything they could to delay letting the commanders at Pearl Harbor know. And those of you who have seen that movie that came out, oh, maybe about 3 or 4, 5 years ago, just before 9-1-1, sort of preparing us for going to war, because just before 9-1-1, we got a whole flock of war movies. Hadn't had them in a long time, but suddenly there were a whole spate of war movies, and there, why, of course, they depicted Pearl Harbor. And after the attack is underway, the ships are burning, the blood every place, and dead soldiers and dead sailors and airmen. Why, here comes a little boy on a bicycle from Western Union with a telegram saying, the Japanese are going to attack you this morning.
Well, that was really a crazy episode, because Rufus Bratton, Colonel Bratton, got word that the Japanese were burning their diplomatic correspondence, and this was
the embassy in Washington D.C.
Yes, the embassy in Washington D.C. and also in Hawaii, the consulate in Hawaii, and he attempted to find General Marshall on that fateful morning, and Marshall was out on a morning horseback ride, and when Marshall came back and he finally found him, Marshall seemed to be really rather not too terribly interested in this intelligence, which of course perpended war with Japan. And he finally, Bratton was able to talk Marshall into, maybe, don't you think it's a good idea that maybe we notify Hawaii? And, of course, Marshall could have picked up the telephone of the Army radiogram and called Hawaii directly, decided not to for security reasons, he later testified, because he was afraid the Japanese would intercept the message. And, I mean, what a lame excuse that was, because this is the same system that Churchill and Roosevelt had used to communicate with each other for months. Now, all of a sudden, they don't want to use it because of security reasons. So, Admiral Kimmel in Hawaii was finally notified of the impending attack by way of a telegram.
Western Union.
Which arrived just as the attack was actually coming to an end, and most of our fleet had already been crippled or destroyed and was burning in Pearl Harbor.
And almost 2,000, almost 3,000 Americans had been killed.
Yes. And but, however, as one officer involved, an intelligence officer by the name of Joseph Rochford, who I think is a key character in the conspiracy, if you want my personal opinion, he said it was a cheap price to pay.
It was a cheap price to pay because they wanted to get us into a war.
Get America into the war. The lives of 2,400 sailors and Marines was a cheap price to pay.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment. That will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, A Route to Global Occupation. A
His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaa.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is David Wade, and basically it was George Santayana who said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." And it was Thomas Jefferson who said that if a people expect to live both ignorant and free in a state of civilization, they expect what never was and never will be. And that is so true today. If we don't understand the past, why, we are going to be taken in as they use these same concepts over and over again. For as Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun, and everything that has happened before is going to happen again. So today, why, we're told, well, we had to go to war because we were attacked on 9/11, but did the government have foreknowledge and not try to stop the attack? Is this another Pearl Harbor? We know that there's a group of people known as the Project for the New American Century, and you can go to their website, newamericancentury.org, and pull down their treatise on rebuilding America's defenses. And what do they talk about? What we need is another incident like another Pearl Harbor. Well, of course, they wanted an excuse to go to war with Iraq. If you read their publication, page 14, they will tell you, we've got to go to war with Iraq. And, of course, now we're at war with Iraq. We've had another Pearl Harbor. Well, David, you know, there are a lot of people, though, who justified what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did, saying, well, we had to get into the war. How else were we going to get the American people to go along with it? How do you respond to that argument?
Well, as a matter of fact, that, of course, is the realpolitik argument in defense of what Roosevelt did, that only America could win the war, only America could stop Hitler, and public opinion would not permit him to get into the war unless he, in fact, fabricated some incident to get us in.
Well, of course,
Pearl Harbor was.
But then American people would never gone to war with Iraq if we hadn't had the
American people would never have gone to war with Iraq had they not been told that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction and was an immediate threat to our own national security. That's right.
So, and of course, the other thing was, of course, the president insisted that somehow Saddam Hussein was involved with 9-1-1, and there's no evidence, of course, that that's true at all. But under any circumstances, once you get into a war, it's very difficult to get out of the war.
Mm-hmm.
So, but let's go back then to what happened as far as Pearl Harbor was concerned. And there was a series of investigations. How many investigations
were there? There were 9 investigations altogether, if you count the last one that began in 1995 and concluded, I believe, the following year, that exonerated Kimmel and Short. 9 investigations. But that includes the first and very superficial investigation by Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox, and it also includes a report that was written by Associate Justice of the Supreme Court Owen Roberts, who was a good buddy of Franklin D. Roosevelt's, and those two were government whitewash jobs.
Well, weren't really all of them, except maybe
the problem was that Congress investigated Pearl Harbor, but it was not permitted for reasons of national security, it was not permitted to hear the testimony of a whole series of people who should have testified. And also, I strongly suspect a lot of the ones that did testify perjured themselves for various reasons.
But
I would have to include in that General George C. Marshall himself.
Well, especially George Marshall himself. In fact, according to John Tolan, he got the leaders of our military together and said, gentlemen, the secret of what happened at Pearl Harbor, will go to have to go to the grave with us. And that comes from John Tolan's book. I'm sure you remember that. You know, one of the most frightening things to me was the revelation by a European diplomat or businessman who had actually been somewhere in the Naval Department the day before the attack and actually saw the map with the Japanese Navy right off the
yes,
Northwest.
That was Renneft was his name, R-A-N-F-T, Johann Renneft, and he was the military or the naval adjutant of the Dutch government in Washington, D.C., and he was actually in the Office of Naval Intelligence on Connecticut Avenue couple of days before Pearl Harbor. Just, I think it was within 48 hours. And he went to his grave swearing that he went by an open door and he saw a briefing going on, and he saw a naval officer pointing to the North Pacific with a pointer and saying, gentlemen, this is the location of the Japanese fleet. And of course, it was immediately northwest of Hawaii. And there could have been no other logical destination for it other than Hawaii.
But actually,
our fleet at on the island of Oahu.
But didn't he actually report? Oh, we're going to be.
Our 4 tapes out on the JFK assassination. It includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is David Wade. His book, Infamy Revisited. And it's important that you really understand the history of what happened almost 65 years ago at Pearl Harbor to really understand what's going on today. It was unpatriotic to question what the administration had done. After all, you know, it would demoralize our men if they had suspected that the president had manipulated us into a war. The American people didn't want to go into the Second World War because they realized they'd been lied to about getting in the First World War, and they certainly didn't want to go into battle again. But you know, it's amazing how you can always convince the people. And it's as old as what Plato had written in the Republic. And that is, when the tyrant has eliminated the enemy by conquest or by treaty and there's nothing to fear from him, then of course the tyrant is always out drumming up another war so he can rally the people behind him. Well, let's go to Fred calling in from Salinas, and I'll put our telephone number out. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Fred, did you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I had a real quick question. I was just wondering, I had some writings that was talked about a ship named the Grissom that was up northwest of Honolulu. Did you know anything about that?
No, I do not. I know about a ship called the Lurleen. You sure it wasn't the Lurleen?
No, it was the Grissom. It was supposed to have had, that was why they didn't want them to look up to the northwest there?
Well, that's right. As a matter of fact, a very mysterious order came out called the Vacant Seas Order.
Mm-hmm.
From the Navy Department, saying that all ships in the North Pacific were to vacate and leave the North Pacific completely wide open. This was one interpretation of this is that what they were trying to do is make sure that the Japanese strike force crossing the North Pacific would not be detected, because that strike force was under orders to turn back if they were.
You know, they had those
plan depended upon surprise attack.
You had those things up on the north end of the island, the radars, and they seen them coming, but they told them not worry about it.
That was on Oahu itself.
Yes.
Because the commander of the radar unit thought that the planes that were being picked up on the radar screen were the flight of B-17s that they were expecting in from the States. And he told them, "Ah, don't worry about that. Your shift is over anyway, so retire."
You know, we had a reenactment of this thing about a month ago here in Salinas, and it was only like a couple days after the attack that they picked up all the Japanese here, and they took them. They had them figured out, clear down to 1/16th. If you had 1/16th,
Roosevelt had ordered. The head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, J. Edgar Hoover, to make a list of every Japanese American in the country, not just in Hawaii or California. He did this by going through phone books and looking for Japanese surnames and picking them all out of the phone books. So if you were a Japanese who didn't have a telephone, then you stood a much better chance of not...
But you know, they already had all the camps built and everything was all up and running. And
oh, sure. I mean, it's no secret, and no reputable historian will deny that we knew we were going to war with Japan. And we knew that, I would say, from the 25th of November, it was certain. That was the day that Roosevelt called off the so-called modus vivendi. Mm-hmm. Up until that time, we were still considering selling the Japanese some oil and some rice and some scrap metal and lifting our embargo. On that day, the Japanese were notified that we would not do this unless, in fact, they withdrew from China and renounced their tripartite treaty.
They didn't want to do that.
Rome and Germany, those were non-negotiable demands that no sovereign nation would submit to, and that, in effect, was a declaration of war against them.
Okay, well,
thank you.
Thanks very much, Fred. And, of course, for any of our listeners out there who would literally like to see some real documentation, I went back to the Sterling University at Yale in 1980, and we have still in our files, and we'll be glad to send you copies, of the Secretary of War Stimson's diary. And we actually have the pages
Stimson's
there.
Stimson's notorious diary.
And basically, he went to the White House on the 25th, along with Frank Knox and General Marshall and, there was, I think, one other person there. Stark.
Admiral Harold Stark. Yes.
And, of course, and President Roosevelt. And he wrote in his diary, there was no question we were going to go to war. Uh-huh. The president thinks it'll be this coming weekend. The Japanese will have a surprise attack. The only question was how we were going to get into the war and get the Japanese to fire the first shot. That's what it was
all
about.
That's the crucial thing, because you hear a lot of people say in defense of Roosevelt, you know, why would he go through all that trouble to isolate Kimmel in short? And why would he set them up for a Japanese attack when we knew or expected that the Japanese were also going to attack us in the Philippines? And wouldn't that be a sufficient casus belli by itself, a sufficient cause of war by itself? Why did he need to have the Japanese execute a surprise attack against Pearl Harbor and get away with it? Well, the answer is that if he did not isolate Kimmel in Hawaii, then Kimmel would have sorteed the fleet. And if the fleet were sorteed, the Japanese would have turned back. And if the Japanese had turned back, then you wouldn't have had your surprise attack, and it would be a situation where the United States would have fired the first shot, quite likely, because Kimmel may indeed have challenged the Japanese fleet. And then we would not be in the position of being the innocent who had the first shot fired against him.
It is just terrible the way that they manipulate people and how little concern they have over the loss of human life, especially American lives.
Mm-hmm.
That is what's so unconscionable. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And their books are there that will tell you this story, but David's done such a great job. And Infamy Revisited, it's a short book, it's concise, but it has all of the important information. When you do programs on this, on other radio networks, Dave, what sort of response do you get from the host? What sort of response do you get from the audience? Can they accept this? Really have
A lot of people find it very hard to accept because they just believe that our own government would not be so perfidious, that our own government would not be involved in this sort of mendacity at this level. They will, for instance, say, well, we all know that Franklin D. Roosevelt was a very sly politician, and he was definitely a pragmatist, but would he knowingly and willingly sacrifice the lives of 2,400 servicemen just to get us into the war? And I say that if you look at history, you find many cases where people have done just that sort of thing. Able to justify it.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Lieutenant Commander McCullough and, of course, the plan?
Oh, Arthur H. McCollum was a Japanologist, an expert in Japan, who had been raised by missionary parents who were stationed in Japan. Matter of fact, there's a story that he was the guy who taught Hirohito how to do the Charleston. And was obsessed with the idea that there would eventually be a war between the United States and Japan anyway, and he thought the right time to get into it was in the early 40s. He wrote a memo in October of 1940, and this memo stated 8 different points. These were things that we needed to do if we wanted to provoke Japan into attacking us. And he said as much in very plain language in the preface that he wrote to this memo. He said, we're doing all we can right now to aid Great Britain in Europe. The only thing left that we can do is to provoke a war with Japan, because we know that Japan is sooner or later going to be attacking Japanese possessions in the Pacific. And in order to relieve Great Britain of the burden of having to fight Japan by itself so it can concentrate on defeating Germany, what we ought to do in order to further aid the Allied cause is get into a war with Japan. And he laid down these 8 points, and they were followed to a T by the Roosevelt administration. We did indeed violate Japanese territorial waters. We did indeed execute an embargo against the importation of goods to Japan, especially oil, which was the lifeblood of the Japanese Navy.
And this was really an act of war on our part. But people that were never told that.
Strangle the Japanese Navy. In a matter of months, we did it, exactly as McCollum recommended. And, of course, one of his 8 points was move the Pacific Fleet from their ports at San Pedro and San Bernardino to Pearl Harbor on the island of Oahu, where it would be within range of a Japanese attack.
And that's what it was all about. They were left there as sitting ducks to tempt the Japanese to attack.
Right. This was a little gem that was unearthed by Robert Stinnett in his great book, Day of Deceit. Wasn't known, this McCullough memo, until he wrote that book, which was published in 1999.
And it really, they did everything they could to conceal it, but through the Freedom of Information Act, that obviously somebody there working in the archives wanted the truth to get out. And they set him what is truly the smoking gun. It was the plan that President Roosevelt followed point by point by point by point, even firing the head of naval operations in the Pacific, who said, we don't want to put our fleet at Pearl Harbor because it is going to be a perfect target. And so Admiral Roberts was simply removed of his commander. Richardson, was it?
Yeah, well, yes, it was Admiral Richardson,
right.
Yes. But he got in a famous argument with Roosevelt in the Oval Office, and Roosevelt fired him, replaced him with Kimmel.
Well, maybe that was the best thing Richardson could have done. Anyway.
Otherwise, he would have been the guy that ended up the scapegoat, yes.
Right. Let's go to Dale calling from Aptos. Hi, Dale.
Hi there. Yeah, listening to your show, and I'd love hearing this this information that doesn't get out to the public very often, except for people dedicated like you there. And what one question I do have is we see a pattern here that these people operate in, an MO, if you don't mind using that term, and especially with listening to the broadcast this past week, it appears that we're being set up, again, it's not unknown, for another attack in favor of this New World Order. And namely, it appears that we're being set up from the southern border. And I would just like to get your perspective on what these people could be up to based on your knowledge. And I'll take your answer on the air.
Now, Dale, is your question, why are we not trying to defend our borders? Or does this have something to do with, being a diversion for something else?
Well, namely, we have your guest's vast knowledge of the background of Pearl Harbor. And what I'm asking is, using that as a template, what does he foresee happening, being set up with the actions that are occurring today in government? Does he perceive something we should be looking out for?
All right, fine.
Well, I can give you a specific parallel. I think we are being prepared for military action against Iran.
Absolutely, right.
Right now, there was a story recently about a memo written by Vice President Cheney to the State Department, or rather to the Defense Department, asking them to prepare for an atomic preemptive attack on Iran using low-level atomic weapons to destroy their nuclear sites. And once again, we're dealing with a situation where the government is deciding that there will be war without bothering to consult the Congress of the United States, the elected representatives of the people. And we are doing this because, once again, we are told Iran now is building weapons of mass destruction, and they have to be put out of commission.
And, of course, they're threatening the United States. My goodness, they may attack New York at any time or set off a nuclear weapon up in this
country. There's absolutely no evidence of this, and it would simply beggar the imagination that Iran would execute a unilateral nuclear strike against the United States, even if they had nuclear weapons, which it may take them another 10 years to develop, if in fact they are even attempting to develop.
Well, actually, I think that they've actually bought and purchased a few. They're not very sophisticated,
yes,
but they have a few of them.
Right, but I mean, they have their own nuclear program is in its infancy, if it exists at all. There's a dispute over that.
Well, you know,
why that they are even attempting to develop nuclear weapons. But I think, we know Saddam Hussein had an infant nuclear weapons program, and he wanted to possess nuclear weapons, I think, mainly because it was a question of national prestige. It would simply beggar my imagination to think that either Iraq or Iran would unilaterally attack the United States with nuclear weapons, even if they ever had them, and invite massive retaliation.
Well, that would be logical, but then after the American people believed the president when he said that, certainly Saddam was trying to buy a yellow cake, uranium ore from Niger, and that was what the Ambassador Wilson flap and the Karl Rove flap is all about. Mm-hmm. The trouble is, there are an awful lot of people who will blindly believe whatever they're told. It's about time people begin to question everything they hear, whether it's, from the Washington, D.C., or on talk radio, or right here on Radio Liberty. Evaluate the facts and try to figure out where the truth is. Mm-hmm. Because there is truth out there. It's just a matter of finding
it. There is truth out there, but the state of public understanding is so abysmal. I read a poll once where over 60% of the American people could not distinguish between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. Somehow they thought they were one and the same person.
Well,
and then in attacking Iraq, we were actually attacking the terrorists who destroyed the World Trade Center.
Well, somebody once said it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincing enough, everybody will believe.
Yes, and this administration has gone out of its way to try to confuse people on that issue. to the speech that President Bush gave in at Fort Bragg before the 82nd Airborne Division. Time and again, he brought up the 9/11 attack on Osama bin Laden when he was talking about the war in Iraq. He did that.
I know. Well,
I heard it. It was amazing. I sat there with my mouth open.
But of course, what's even more amazing is that he would hesitate for the time of applause, and there wasn't any applause.
Oh, yes. And this was the military. You think he's commander-in-chief. At least they could get him to applaud their commander-in-chief. But, yes, the audience reaction was not encouraging.
And that was a very unusual talk. Anyway, David, thank you very much
for
being with us. Our guest has been David Wade, his book, Infamy, Revisited. And we're going to tell you in just a couple of minutes how to get that and how to get other information on that. Because those who cannot remember the past are certainly condemned to repeat it. God bless you, David. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today. Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we carry David Wade's book, Infamy Revisited. It's an inexpensive book. I think it's only $8.95, and we certainly recommend it to you. But we have a great four-tape set on Pearl Harbor. We have a two-hour interview with Robert Stinnett, who wrote Day of Deceit. We have a one-hour interview with John Toland. And John Toland was the great author who wrote Infamy, the first book. In fact, he started out thinking it would be a condemnation of Japan, but as he began to research it, he realized, of course, that the people in Washington, D.C. knew the attack was coming, trapped the Japanese, did everything they could to lure them into the attack, and then left the men there to die. So if you'd like to get that, and of course the actually the last interview was with Admiral Moore, who certainly was the sort of the dean of the military officers, one of the most respected military officers here in the United States, and it's an interview with him. So the four tapes out on Pearl Harbor, nothing quite like it. And then we do carry Robert Stinnett's book, Day of Deceit, so you can get Infamy by David Wade, you can get Robert Stinnett's book, Day of Deceit, and you can get the four tapes set on Pearl Harbor, and you have to understand the past to understand what's going on. We have a new four tapes set, or relatively new, about 2 months now, 3 months, called 911 Revisited, a two-hour interview with Paul Thompson, who wrote The Terror Timeline, and of course an interview with Jimmy Walter, who spent literally millions of dollars of his own money in New York City putting on television broadcasts. And he actually got the majority of the people in New York to realize they'd been lied to about what happened on 911, and not a word of that got out across America. And most people, unless they've of course heard Jimmy Walter on the radio, have no idea, of course, that here is a man who felt so deeply about the betrayal of the people in the Twin Towers that he put out millions of dollars to buy television time, and the people of New York, at least inside the city of New York, know what most people do not know, and that is we have not been told the truth. We actually have a copy of a publication. It was called Operation Bajinka. It appeared on the internet about 2 months before the attack. It was written by Bill Gertz. It was on I think United Airlines or Delta Airlines has stewardesses or attendants website talking about the plan that they knew about at that time, and this is 2 months ahead of time, to hijack our planes and crash them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, the Transamerica building, and the Sears building, I think in Chicago, and into the CIA building or the Pentagon. I've forgotten which it was, but they knew exactly what was going to happen. But they didn't want the American people to know. And how could you ever admit the truth to the American people? Any more than you could admit that there were torture going on of prisoners, or that there were people within our government who were actually involved in drug smuggling in the United States. And if you don't think that this whole drug scam is being, of course, perpetrated by the CIA, you need to get the book Double Cross. It's written by the brother of the head of the mafia. Of course, Sam Giancana was killed, and of course it was felt he'd been killed by the CIA. That was a double cross, because he and the CIA had been working together so closely for so many years. And they would do the assassinations for the CIA, and the CIA would help them to get the drugs in this country. Of course, the DEA and the other agencies weren't in on the scam. But then when Sam Giancana was going to be testified before the Senate to actually call to testify or subpoena to testify why he was killed. He was assassinated in typical gangland fashion, assumably by somebody who was one of his friends in the Central Intelligence Agency. A fascinating book, Double Cross, and where they talk about the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy and why Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald. Things you're never going to hear, and yet the book's been out for a long time. But you won't hear it discussed on most programs. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember, behind everything are dark spiritual forces. And there really is organized evil in the world today. So pray for America and pray for revival. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.